You know what? I could see a Pierre Gasly win this season.
Aston Martin showing you that money can't buy speed.
It is impressive that they've set those fast laps. And I think they are going to be, could well be contenders this year, actually.
I do feel a bit missold, to be honest. I think Williams did talk a big game going into this year, and it seems that operationally they are still not at that place they need to be able to keep up with the top teams.
Hello and welcome. Formula One is back, and so is your midweek fix of all things F1. This is the Essential F1 Podcast, and we would love it if you could hit that bell and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. I am Vicky Butler-Henderson, and I am standing in for the globe-trotting Nicola Hume. But don't worry, we are in super safe hands because the Oracle, oh yes, Mr. Lights Out and Away We Go, Ben Edwards is here.
Thank you. And what a show we have as well. It's that time of year again when everything is possible in Formula One. And 2026 is one of those biggest years for the regulation rules all being reset. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all comes together. You're in the right place to be fully brought up to speed with what we think about this new look of Formula One.
And we are joined as well by the man who knows an awful lot about F1, just like you, Ben. He is influencer and TalkSport's F1 go-to guy. He is Tomo McCluskey. Hello.
I mean, surrounded by legends today. By the way, new studio, Vicky Butler-Henderson, Ben Edwards. I mean, come on. Like, we can put the world to rights today. I'm looking forward to this,
yes. 100%. Yeah.
Tomo, it's fantastic to have you with us. Thanks so much for coming along for this one, because we'll be going into how this pre-season has gone for some of the teams, then look through all of the teams this year, who's going to be strong, who's not going to be so strong, and of course diving into what we think is going to happen in Australia, which has got to be one of the most unpredictable ever, but that's what we're going to be looking into.
Oh my gosh, I know. Lots and lots to unpack, and the season hasn't even, you know, got fully away yet. Producer Jim is back, ladies and gentlemen, not only for the 2026 season, but also back from Bahrain. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
What have you picked out for us to discuss this week?
Yes, unfortunately, we have to start with Aston Martin, who had the worst possible pre-season. All that money in the car is both slow and unreliable.
And Jim sounds so depressed about it all as well.
Fuming. Absolutely fuming.
Yeah, I'm so disappointed in everyone. But is it rescuable? This situation, discuss.
It's a big question. That is a big question. And the limited mileage that they actually did, the laps that they did around 300, just over 300, whereas McLaren did over 800 laps in that testing in Bahrain. What's really worrying is the number of times the car was just stopped off in the pit lane once again. And for Fernando Alonso, of course, this has got to be so disappointing, hasn't it? Because we did think with Honda being involved with Aston Martin, now the whole rejig of Aston Martin over the last few years, ready for this year, we thought that they would actually be one of the ones right up at the top level.
I mean, this has been a project in the works now since what Lawrence Stroll bought that team in 2020, saved it. And you know, 6 years later, this was meant to be the crescendo, right? All the money that's gone into Silverstone, completely changing that team, taking it from a plucky underdog and turning it into a team that a marquee like Aston Martin can be proud of. And it's been a hell of a false start. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong seems to have possibly gone wrong. They almost didn't make that first test in Barcelona, the shakedown. Yeah. Then they do turn up and get, you know, 300 and something laps where you had Mercedes. And bear in mind, they're the only team running that Honda power unit as well. So Mercedes, Ferrari have multiple teams running Indeed. Their power units. They're getting so many more kilometres on these brand new engines. And Aston Martin, it feels like, you know, you would hope with the personnel they have, you know, the Avengers have assembled with Alonso, with Newey and the rest. But I mean, names are just names. All of these teams have incredibly talented and well-respected individuals, and Aston Martin have started on the back foot, to put it lightly, I think.
Vicky, we've seen Honda in so many things over the years in different forms of motorsport, and yet we have seen this sometimes. When Honda come back into something, they're not always right at the top straight away.
No, exactly. And I'm just looking forward, basically, to the car-to-pit chit-chat from from Mr. Alonso and see what he's got to say about that. It is a massive shame because Honda is a fantastic brand and they have made wonderful road cars and been so dominant in motorsport, you know, across the globe for decades. And it is just baffling. I mean, it, you know, it's way beyond my brain power, though, to work out what's going on.
When Fernando, you know, recommitted his future to this team, he called it a lifetime project. The lifetime of the team
or
the power unit or him? Is he just going to be here forever or is he going to go race the Aston Martin WEC car? I don't know. So.
It is a tough one, isn't it? It is tough. And they because they have done so few laps effectively, it's going to take them a long time to get back up to the sort of level we want to see them at. But we will find out. We will find out.
Jim, what else has piqued your interest? Hopefully something a little bit more exciting.
Well, yes. In contrast, Alpine with Mercedes power seem like they're the best of the midfield in Bahrain. Also still rumours abound that Captain Christian Horner is buying into the team. Could we see Alpine podiums this season? Discuss.
You know what? I could see a Pierre Gasly win this season.
Really?
That's honestly
brave.
I'm with you on that.
You know what? I think Alpine, as much as you know, you've got to say it's pretty embarrassing for Renault to give up on the engine program, close down Viri and move away from that. But pragmatically, aligning with Mercedes, who the expectation is going to this season, is going to have the best power unit. And Enstone have always made good chassis. You know, that is, if maybe they were 2-3 tenths down in terms of power unit last year and they could still be competitive at the top of the midfield. If you can make a good chassis, David Sanchez, who's technical lead at Alpine, he's the guy who designed the 22 Ferrari that started the last regulation cycle so strong. With a Mercedes power unit in the back and Pierre Gasly in his prime, we'll see.
I think something will, the dice will be thrown on a particular race. I can definitely see him at the top. But if you're a second team, so you're not Mercedes and you're running that Mercedes engine, surely you're going to get, you know, some sort of second class service.
Well, McLaren didn't have the top spec in the test just gone. Mercedes had that top spec from McLaren will have it for the first race, but yeah, you're right. That could maybe work against them.
But the Mercedes power is obviously very strong. We've seen that throughout the testing, and that certainly helps Alpine. But this question about Christian Horner possibly coming in, that is very, very interesting. And of course, Drive to Survive, Netflix, that came out recently. And it was really interesting, the chat that was going on about how Toto Wolff had actually communicated with Christian after he'd left Formula One. And they had a really quite reasonable chat, even though they are two of the greatest rivals as team bosses in Formula One. So whether Christian's going to come back or not, it's going to be a fascinating part. And as you say, if Alpine are up there winning as well, it could be a very interesting time.
Yeah, I'd love to see him back. I mean, part of what made that 21 season so special was Toto and Christian. You know, you had the skirmishes on track and you had them two going at it off track. And I think, you know, sport needs those narratives, doesn't it? For you to really buy into. And it almost felt like a boxing fight going throughout that season on track and off track. So, yeah, I would, a character like Christian Horner, I think the sport, you know, whether you like him or loathe him, that's what you want from people at times as well. You know, someone you can really buy, a Marmite character. And I think Christian is definitely that.
One of my thoughts actually was the fact that the power unit for Red Bull, under the Ford name, but remember, this has actually been put together by Red Bull for 5 years, this engine manufacturing. Of course, Christian was key to putting that whole thing together. He's no longer the boss of Red Bull. And yet we've seen already that the power unit is doing a fantastic job. So that must feel a bit strange to him in a way. You know, he would probably feel a bit odd being away from something that is impressing people already with the power. We'll see whether Max is going to be quite as up top level as we've seen him in the past. It may be a different story, but it will be very interesting.
And I think it's clear that Christian wants skin in the game. He wants some ownership. And with, you know, Mercedes, they own the kind of the team, not outright, but you've got the splits there. You've got Audi owning Sauber fully now. There's not many opportunities. There's not many ways in if Christian does want some ownership, and Alpine is, yeah, I think he gets on pretty well with Flav. But, so I could see that happening.
But if he puts money in, fair enough, but he's going to want his hands in as well because he's not the kind of person who'll just go and eat a prawn sandwich, you know, up in a box. So is there room for that, for him to be back on the pit wall?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it would be him, wouldn't it, with a group of investors who he can kind of sell the dream and be like, look, you know, if you help me bankroll this, I can lead this team to greatness just like I did with, because you can't fault Christian's resume. you know, with in that, you know, Toto and Christian speaking, what, 14 of the last 15 world championships have been won by either Toto Wolff or Christian Horner. It speaks volumes.
It does.
Oh, Jim, what other nuggets have you got for us?
Well, another talking point from Bahrain is how these cars start off the grid. They take ages to prep, and there seems to be a big disparity between the teams of how well they get away from the start. So what can we expect to see at Lights Out in Melbourne? Discuss. Well,
that's a good question. And we've got a Lego Ferrari down here and Lego Mercedes. And the Ferrari getting off the line when we've been seeing them do those practice starts in testing, very, very impressive, because they've got this smaller turbo and they can pick up the speed more quickly. And I was watching a few of those practice starts and what Hamilton and Leclerc were doing from way back down the grid to be able to come through. I think that's a key part. You know, it may not be that they're the fastest qualifiers, but perhaps they can snatch in front at the start of the race.
I don't know. I mean, these cars, you know, no MGUH this year, which means turbo lag, as I'm sure you know turbo lag very well, Vicky.
It's rather cumbersome, yes. And you sort of sit there just waiting. Yeah. Oh, and then the turbo works. Mm.
That wasn't such an issue with the previous generation, more so now. Definitely. So you have to sit on the grid and rev the engine for seemingly ages. And yeah, I mean, look, we'll see. Ferrari have always had a small turbo. They had it in the last regulation cycle. They always did well out of those kind of traction zones that you get at Bahrain as well, right? So Ferrari and Haas and even Cadillac relatively all had a pretty good test. How much of that is track specific is hard to say, but certainly it should help them off the starts. As everyone's getting on top of these regulations, you would expect the other team, the Mercedes power, etc. to also, but it should be an early advantage for the Ferrari powered teams. But we'll see.
Do you think it's just pure luck that Ferrari have recently had a small turbo, or do you think that they knew what was coming down the road?
It's possible that they may actually have thought, you know, that sticking with a small turbo is actually going to be an advantage because, as you said, because now there's this weight to build up the energy that hadn't existed with the old systems of those engines. You could rev it up and it was there straight away. But now you have to wait for it to build up. But with the smaller turbo, it will be quicker.
But will it hurt them in Monza?
Exactly.
Baku?
On some race circuits, it may not suit them so well on some of the really long straights. Exactly. So we shall wait and see.
And also the start. Nobody has yet done a start where a car is bang in front of them in their grid position. They've always had a gap. In pre-season sort of start testing. So I wonder how many people are going to have an issue on the grid and someone parks their car up someone else's derriere.
Well, the hope is, I guess, from, you know, the practice starts that they did do in testing, that they are able to now put that into their simulator and give the drivers ample opportunity to really practice. Because there were some concerns early. McLaren were piping up a bit about, oh, this could be a bit dangerous. But actually, a lot of the other drivers were like, nah, it seems to be fine. And again, there's a lot of, how much of it is kind of fear-mongering for, you know, we'll see in Australia, basically, right? How much of this is actually true or not. And hopefully it's going to be fine. But yeah, when Franco had a bit of a moment, didn't he, where he was the one who almost put it in the wall because it seemed to catch him out a little bit. But also just these things happen, right? It's a new car for everyone to get used to. So expect the unexpected.
Which all eyes on the first race. I mean, let's get some eyes on for the season. What else have you got for us, producer Jim?
Well, finally, out of Bahrain tests, the top four teams of 2025 still look the fastest. However, the mood music is that Mercedes seemed very confident. Could this be George's year? Or could Kimi Antonelli be this year's Oscar Piastri plus? Discuss.
Good question. That is a good question. And there's no doubt that for many people rating George Russell as number one potential to win the championship. But as we've seen in the past, when you have a team that is the dominant team, and of course Mercedes have been there in another new technology in 2014, for example, the two teammates were Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg then. That year, Lewis Hamilton did go on to win the championship. But interestingly, Nico Rosberg won the first race that year in Melbourne. So it's going to be an interesting situation. I do think, I don't know, what do you think, Tomek? I think Kimi Antonelli is impressive. And now that he's done a full year as a rookie, he's in a different step to really put George under some pressure. But I do rate George very highly.
Yeah, I mean, look, Kimi has already proven he can hang with George. Like, you look at him, Sao Paulo, he was there the entire weekend quicker than George. Miami obviously put it on sprint pole and you know, was consistently quicker over those small number of weekends. But then you look at the European leg and Kimi was nowhere. So yeah, he's shown that he's got the minerals to fight on occasion, but over the course of a 24 race season, I mean, George is surely going to expect to score more points than him, surely.
Well, he is impressive. I mean, he's done such a fantastic job. He's never won, actually, Melbourne yet. He's one of those drivers that hasn't won Melbourne. The last 5 years have been five new winners of Australia. So, yeah, they might have won elsewhere. But the last 5 years, it's always been, oh, my first win in Australia for various drivers. He could be the sixth because he is talented. We know he's got a good car. And George, when he gets it all right, can do a superb job.
Yeah, and I think Mercedes, Toto have been vindicated in picking him as well, because it's huge, you know, to step into Lewis Hamilton's shoes, right? But actually, they've got that. For me, I think Mercedes have that balance where I do think George will get the better of Kimi more often than not. And you've got that, you know, McLaren struggled with that last year, trying to have two number ones. I think George is ready. In my opinion, he's absolutely ready. I think he's quick enough. He's got that kind of crashy nature, I think, out of his system a bit, where, you know, Max had that early in his career, Charles had that early in his career. George, you know, we know George can make a mistake, but I feel like now he's matured into a driver that I think Mercedes can rely on to deliver if the opportunity presents itself. He can race wheel to wheel. He's not afraid to take it to, like, Max Verstappen, right? If Max has got a top car and he's the best driver in F1 right now, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, George has all the... It's all there in him. I just hope that he gets the car throughout the entire season as well, because I expect the pecking order in Australia to be totally different to the pecking order in Abu Dhabi final
Quite
race
possible.
Of the year.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Ooh, exciting. Good. You're revving us up beautifully, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Now then, let us drill a little bit deeper into the teams and the drivers. So we'll start with the newbies for this season, Cadillac. So they are welcoming Sergio Perez and also Valtteri Bottas, both last seen on an F1 grid in 2024. It's also run by the ex-Marussia boss, Graham Loudon. So things, you know, on paper, they've got good stock really behind them. What do we think?
I think they actually, initially they looked as though they were struggling a bit, but I thought they put together some pretty good testing in the end. And of course they do have Ferrari power, like you were saying earlier. So it looks as though the Ferrari power is certainly up there. You know, maybe Mercedes power is a bit stronger, but it is good for them. They will in future years, build their own power units. But for the moment, this is what they're working on with Ferrari. And I think, you know, having those two drivers, as you said, who didn't race last year, but they've done a lot of racing in the past. They're both race winners, championship contenders who haven't taken the titles. But to help develop a team that is coming in fresh and having to learn right from the bottom, effectively, I think it's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, they are starting fresh. Because even Haas, you know, they bought a bunch of the old Marussia stuff. They used the old Marussia factory when they came into F1. So, like, you know, they are fully, you know, cellophane off starting from fresh. and surely, like, you know, Bottas and Perez, right? You've got two very pragmatic, very sensible. They're not drivers known for, you know, writing cars off left, right and centre. You know, they're going to have so much feedback from all of the teams that they've driven for in their respective careers. And again, it might have not been the most exciting choice. You know, Colton Herta, I would love to have seen in that car. Maybe take a punt on a younger driver as well. But I think, yeah, I mean, they've made the pragmatic choice for the team for the long term. And Aston Martin have shown it's not all that easy. Yeah. And Cadillac were more impressive, certainly from an operational point of view, than Aston Martin, which is, I would say, it's funny, isn't it? The whole Andretti bid was written off by F1 because they were in part concerned that the team wouldn't be competitive enough. And I think Cadillac have turned up. And yes, aerodynamically, their car isn't, you know, anywhere near the Aston Martin, let's say, right? You can see that from the eye test, but they've turned up very respectable, and I think they've proved a lot of people wrong already.
I think they've taken the Mario Andretti name too, haven't they? In
they have.
Categorising the car.
They have indeed. MAG, I think.
Yeah. That's rather fun.
Very,
I like
nice little touch.
Oh, that's a nice touch. Yeah. Next one to have a look at is Audi. So this is a return to F1, kind of, because the predecessor from the 1930s raced under the banner of Auto Union. We've got Nico Hülkenberg and Gabriele Bortoleto. What do we think of these boys?
Yeah, well, I think I do think it's a good mix. I mean, I've always rated Nico Hülkenberg well over all these years, and then he got that podium at last at Silverstone last year, which was fantastic. But Bortoleto, I think, was impressive too. He did a very good job last year in his first full season as a rookie, and now it is, as you say, the Audi name, and with Audi power, of course. So it is the only team that we've got with Audi power. I mean, they did it better than Honda with Aston Martin in terms of the mileage they did, but there is obviously still a huge amount for them to develop and learn as we go through this first season for them as Audi.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Binotto has, you know, as a team principal, it didn't work particularly well at Ferrari, but his years prior to that, as, you know, top of their kind of engine division, you know, in the Schumacher days as well with Ferrari, you know, Binotto knows his stuff with engines. Jonathan Whitley knows his stuff when it comes to running a team. He's, you know, operational guru at Red Bull Racing.
Yeah, super.
And yeah, I mean, they've hired a lot. It's still Sauber. It's going to take some time for that team to really morph into Audi. And, you know, they've had the resource for a long time, Sauber, but never been able to kind of fully optimize it. And as you say, Ben, yeah, that obviously only car running that engine might be a bit of an issue. But all in all, I think Bortoleto was great last year, by the way. I think Hülkenberg's always been a bit of a demon over a lap, but Bortoleto was right with him. And I think Nico's quality shone in the races when he got that podium in Silverstone. But Gabby...
Yeah.
Future world champion.
No, I really rate him. I think he's very, very good. And I think as a team, going in new with the power unit, as you say, it is a team with experience from Sauber, but now is Audi. I think that experience of Nico Hülkenberg with so many years of experience in Formula One, but also having a good rookie is actually, I think, really helpful at a time when you're going into a completely different type of car to drive.
Yeah.
And a youngster can sometimes adapt really quickly. And I think that could work for them.
And also Audi, as we know from WRC touring cars, Le Mans, the diesel TDI, like, they know how to win in motorsport.
But Formula One's another world.
Yeah, it is. And I wonder about the engine, because it's difficult for Audi, because they couldn't have gone to Mercedes for their engine. They couldn't have gone to Ferrari because they're Audi. Mm. They can't be seen to be taking someone else's power unit. But it would have been sensible to have done that, because you can hit the ground running a little better and a little smoother if they could have done that. But
yeah,
because
Sauber,
rocking a hard place.
They were already running, you know, Ferrari power units. So yeah, they could have carried that on. But I think, you know, these whole rules with the whole 50-50 energy split were in a big way to get Audi in, you know. And so we'll see. Like, I'm very interested. I'm expecting, again, issues with them being the only team running that power unit. I reckon reliability could hurt them and Honda quite a bit more than the Ferrari and Mercedes power units.
Makes sense.
But, you know, foundationally, Sauber have been in a much better place, I think, since, you know, Binotto and Wheatley and all that kind of new generation have come into the team. So we'll see.
Okay, next is everybody's favourite second team, Williams. Mm-hmm. some first favourite team. Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz.
It was not
a great start.
No, it was a challenging start, wasn't it? Because they didn't manage to make it out in Spain for that first initial test. Mm-hmm. And they are definitely back a little bit in terms of just the sheer mileage. You need to get that mileage done. A lot of the testing that we've seen going up to this first race has been not so much about speed. It's just about putting the mileage in, learning as much as you can. And I think Paul Williams did miss out on that. Mind you, I did think that they managed to develop quite well, that they were making good progress. And again, it's a good drive. Line up with Carlos Sainz and Alex Albon. They're both smart drivers. Carlos is always very good at thinking through everything, working things out. And the way he developed in the Williams team last year was impressive. Alex, I think, also has great sheer talent. And these new cars might suit him. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, I do think it's going to be an interesting season for Williams, but it might be a bit of a tough start.
Yeah, I mean, Alex is my number one. He's my favourite driver in F1. And I do feel a bit missold, to be honest. I think Williams did talk a big game going into this year, and it seems that operationally they are still not at that place they need to be able to keep up with the top teams. They might have the quality of personnel, but missing out that shakedown in Barcelona entirely when you've spoken so much about we're sacrificing 2025, we're not developing the car, it's all about 26, to not even make that first shakedown. Yeah, to me, I was very, very disappointed in that. But you're so right. Like, they've two quality drivers in their primes. Yeah, Carlos's racing IQ is unbelievable, and that's going to really pay dividends, I think, this year. The car's reportedly a bit overweight.
Yeah.
Which should be easy performance to gain early in the season versus if you're at the weight limit, like I believe Alpine are, then you're going to have to try and, you know, find performance with aero, which is more of a challenge. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I'm just a bit gutted, like, that it's not...
Oh, no, I'm just sad. I'm so sorry.
I'm just generally sad about it, to be honest.
Yeah, but anything...
I was hoping for, like, Albon podiums again, because it's like, oh, he got that little sniff at him at Red Bull, but it didn't quite work out, and it's just a shame, because I think everyone's got a soft spot for Williams, you know.
Yeah, so. And I think they can make the progress. I honestly do.
I really hope so.
I think they can move on quite well, so we'll see.
You want to go and join producer Jim in the depressed corner?
Yeah, it does. You do. It's cosy over there, Jim.
Right, Racing Bulls next. We've got Liam Lawson and then Arvid Lindblad, who is the only F1 proper rookie of 2026, picked from F2.
Yeah, no, he's been impressive. He's only 18 years old, let's remember. A young man.
He is a baby.
I've seen a couple of interviews that he's been doing already, and I'm quite impressed with the way he's, you know, staying pretty calm. Okay, you know, when you get into racing, the tension goes greater, but he's dealing with it all pretty well. He is the only full rookie there. Whether, you know, how quickly he's going to learn tracks, that's one of the things. I mean, at least he's doing more testing before the start of the season, unlike the rookies last year. They weren't allowed to do this much testing because the cars were already well set, had been set for several years like that. So he's had a bit more testing, but of course there will be many tracks he has not driven yet, even though he's done F2. There'll be some circuits that he knows. Mind you, it was Kimi Antonelli who seemed to not do so well on races where he knew well from Formula 2 than he did when he got on circuits that he didn't know so well. Yeah. So, you know, we can't tell. And I do think, although Racing Bulls didn't shine in terms of the performance, I think they're still going to be actually pretty competitive in that midfield. You know, they're definitely part of the midfield. I think they are going to be pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, look, Arvid's, what, youngest F3 race winner of all time, youngest F2 race winner of all time. I think Red Bull have been known to chuck youngsters in their car and not be afraid to do that. But I think even more emboldened with the Kimi move, to be like, yeah, we're going to give this kid a chance. And obviously Yuki's test and reserve at Red Bull and Racing Bulls this season. So, yeah, I think Arvid, the expectation is higher. But I also, you know, I think this new Red Bull lineup, obviously you've got Laurent Mekies in charge now of, I know, not Racing Bulls, that's Alain Permain, but the broader Red Bull family, I'm sure they'll be more patient with their young drivers. I'd like to think so. Again, Marco's not there anymore either. And give Lindblad a chance to, can you say he's
do 18? At least half a season?
I mean, that would be, yeah, you know, Jack Doohan would have loved that. But Alpine saw to it. And Liam Lawson got two races, which I still can't believe. But I'm glad Liam's got a seat as well. Because Liam, he's had these moments. He's been chucked in in Zandvoort, Singapore, he qualified Max. And that was like 2023, whenever that was. I can't even remember now. And this is the first year he's going to get like a full pre-season and hopefully the full season. Which is like, it's kind of, but give him the best opportunity to succeed, you know, Liam. I think Liam's kind of got written off, but I hope he rediscovers that and rebuilds his stock, I guess, amongst the fan base, because I think it's quite easy to write off Lawson. I do think he'll be the better of the two, but I think Lindblad's got massive upside.
Yeah.
Okay.
He will definitely get the Rookie of the Year award at the end of the year. So that's in the bag.
That's very true.
Best and worst rookie?
Exactly. Everything. Okay, moving on to Haas now, which has never had a podium yet.
Oh my, yeah, you're right.
Can you believe it? I know. We've got Esteban Ocon and Brit Ollie Bearman.
Yeah, we have. And they've been showing good form. There's no doubt, using the Ferrari power again, they've been showing some very good form in testing, and quite close to Alpine they've been during some of that testing action that's been going on. So we do think they're going to be up near the top of midfield, and the chance to actually score decent points this year, I think, for the Haas team, quite impressive. They really worked really hard to make sure that they made it to Barcelona. I think it was a pretty tight for them to get everything ready and get there
on time, but they managed it. And I think they've really controlled it well, the whole setup of testing. It's so important to get those laps done. That's when you can learn so much. And I think that's what they're doing.
I think the Io Komatsu effect has really kicked in, because he's got that team firing all cylinders, like super diligent, the way they've gone about things, just churning the laps. It's great news for Ferrari as well, to know their power units doing loads of laps in the Haas as well, which uses, they share so much. And yeah, I think that, you know, Komatsu didn't, and you saw the interview, him talking about Esteban Ocon, saying he kind of expected more from Esteban last year as a race winner alongside Ollie Bearman, a little bit of a kick up the backside. But I think Esteban will respond well from, but Ollie was the stronger of the two drivers, I think, objectively last season. And Ollie's got to be thinking ahead to, you know, when Lewis does eventually hang up the gloves, that Ferrari seat was surely his. Because I think he's done enough in his first season to show, yeah, the upside is there. Very similar to Charles Leclerc, the consistency when Charles was in a Sauber, and proved to Ferrari that he deserved that opportunity. I think Behrman's in a great place, and I hope Ocon can. He had a good Abu Dhabi. If he didn't have that good last race at the end of last season, I would have been very concerned for Esteban this year. But I think Haas are in a great place, and I think Komatsu's got a lot to be thanked for that.
Yeah.
And Ollie, a fellow Essex boy.
Oh, indeed.
Oh, that's nice.
Indeed, one of us.
So moving on to Alpine then, we have Pierre Gasly and Franco Colapinto. Not a great season last year, but this year looking good?
I mean, looking pretty good, right, Ben?
Yeah, we've already been talking about Alpine, haven't we? Because they were right at the very top level of that midfield group in testing. They've done a great job. They've done plenty of laps. They've worked really well. Okay, as we've said, you know, it's a change of engine, change of power unit this year for them. But it's been working well with the Mercedes power, no doubt about it. And it's not just the power unit. They've clearly put the car together well. Just to remind everybody, these cars are slightly shorter, slightly narrower. I actually enjoyed watching the cars around the laps. In terms of the cornering, there's a bit more sliding. And yes, I know a lot of us are wondering, are they going to be able to push that hard through all the corners because of the power units? And they're having to save electricity. It will build up the electricity power through some of the corners. They might not be flat out. But I do think that the cars actually look fun. And the Alpine, I think they've worked it well, haven't they?
Yeah, it definitely passes the eye test. I think the car looks good. It looks a bit front limited, but I think they'll find that with time. And I also want to talk about Colapinto, because waxed lyrical about Gasly. But I think Colapinto deserves more than just to be labelled as like a pay driver. I think, you know, he was chucked in after six races last year with very, very little relative preparation, and was average quali about a quarter of a second off of Pierre, and Pierre's great over a lap. And yeah, he had a few, you know, incidents early on in the season, Silverstone crash, Imola crash, but for the rest of the year, he kind of settled it down and got into his... And I think there's big upside to Colapinto. I think Williams gave him that shot for a reason, and he impressed way more than Sargeant did at any point, if you ask me, when he was in the Williams. So I expect good things from Colapinto. Again, Gasly's a very safe pair of hands as well. I think they've got a really good balance there within the team. And yeah, we'll see what the future holds, because I mean... On track, I think they're in quite a stable position. But in terms of management and ownership and all of that, who knows?
Yeah, that's what we don't know. But that will turn out.
Flav's still in charge, exactly, so yeah. Anything can happen.
Yeah, indeed.
Aston Martin showing you that money can't buy speed. And it has been 25 years since Fernando Alonso took to the Australian Grand Prix grid to start with. Can you believe that?
I know.
And then Lance Stroll.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's funny. Fernando Alonso is 44 years old this year. 44, isn't that Lewis Hamilton's race number? But Lewis is 41. But they are, of course, 44. He is the oldest of the drivers, Fernando Alonso. But we all still rate him. I mean, he can still deliver. But what's sad, as we were saying earlier, is that we just don't think he's going to have anything to deliver. Certainly in the first part of the season, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, I mean, Honda have come out and basically said that a lot of the issues are to do with vibration of the power of the battery, which is then not enabling them to deploy the battery properly, creating, you know, the thing is they can't do enough laps to then diagnose other issues as well.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a self-fulfilling like catch-22 situation. So yes, I expectations are very low. There's been some very concerning reports I was reading this morning from, I think, Motorsport Italy, saying that, you know, they might just basically turn it into a test session and they don't expect to finish the race with either car. But they're going to, obviously, they're going to go, yeah, all the corporate, all of that, they're going to be there. But expectations are very low for the start of the season. And yeah, look, again, Honda's pedigree in motorsport is huge and very impressive. The problem is when they initially pulled out of F1, or announced they were going to pull out anyway, they lost a lot of staff, they closed down their engine, and they've had to rebuild that team. They lost people to Red Bull powertrains, indeed, they lost people to Mercedes, etc., etc. So, you know, you can say Honda, but it's just people at the end of the day. It's just a bunch of people working together, and if they can do it, they'll make something good. And if they can't, it doesn't matter if they're called Honda or nothing else. Like, we will see on track, but I mean, maybe they've pushed it too much as well. There was, you know, reports Adrian had been asking for, you know, batteries to be put in a certain way, and these changes had affected their ability for them to, you know, produce something that can be relied upon. You know, yeah, so well and good being quick, but if it goes boom all the time, then no good.
Well, and of course, with Adrian Newey running it, as he is one of the great designers, but there's only so much you can do. But it will be fascinating. And I think he has been briefing people very well. The good thing about him is, okay, we're right down here, but we know what to work on. He's not somebody who's going to be vague about what to work on.
Yeah,
he'll know. Yeah. He'll know.
Also with Fernando, I think he's 44, but if he's, you know, still fit enough, his brain's still switched on. I don't think age has got anything really to go against him.
I mean, I would say his racing IQ is one of his biggest. I think him and Carlos particularly stand out to me as they have a lot of, and maybe with this whole battery management side of things, that is going to pay dividends exponentially more than it would have done in the past. So, I mean, the way he's doing it at 44, I know Kimi's talked about, Kimi Raikkonen, how he started to lose his edge a bit, you know, in his early 30s. Sebastian's openly talked about, you know, he didn't feel like he was the driver he was.
And Nico Rosberg, after his world championship, he's like, I'm done, I can't mentally do it anymore.
And so, Fernando's still at that level. That's that longevity. Even, I know Schumacher had a break and then came back and still got that, you know, pole in Monaco. But like, Fernando's longevity is like nothing we've ever seen in the sport.
Age is just a number, kids.
It is. But we're not mentioning much about his teammate, Lance Stroll, are we?
Oh, yes. Let's not. Moving on. Red Bull then. Expectations are high. Mm. We have got Max Verstappen and Isaac Hadjar, and they are looking good.
Yeah, they are looking good. Yeah. I think, you know, Max Verstappen is such a talent, as we know. Well, the way he fought for that championship right down into the final race last year, fantastic, with a car that really didn't work in the early part of the season. And that's, you know, we're looking at 24 races again this year. So whatever the way it starts, and actually initially in testing, I was, you know, they looked really strong. And yes, after the whole testing was done, they didn't look quite as top level, because Mercedes were looking very good, Ferrari strong as well, but they are in that top four. And I think Max Verstappen's talent is going to be a key part of that as well. And Isaac Hadjar, it's fun that he's now got this full seat alongside Max Verstappen with the cars completely different. And that's a great time, I think, to actually go alongside and see what you can do with
it. Probably the best time, isn't it, to go alongside Max when the playing field's quite level.
Yeah, sure. I mean, surely I expect Isaac to be closer than anyone has been since Daniel Ricciardo. Like, I would feel quite confident in that assertion. But yeah, I mean, just who knows where Red Bull's going to be. At least they've got two cars running that power unit, which is an advantage. And they've been working on that power unit division at Milton Keynes for a long time now. I think, especially long term, that's going to pay dividends, because that Red Bull powertrains facility has been built from the ground up, right? So it's going to be newer than any other, and it's going to be, you know, for 2026, I'm not expecting them to break past the Mercedes powered teams at the front. But also, I think, I mean, I don't know how you two feel about Max's comments recently about the sport and where it is at the moment. I think he's got a deal to the end of 28. That's his current deal at Red Bull Racing. In my opinion, like, Red Bull have shown enough already that he'll probably stick by them. I don't see him moving to another team. He doesn't really like these rules anyway, and he'll go and race in Le Mans or just do something completely different. But I think Red Bull have shown enough that Max can be confident. It's worth giving the team a go. You've still got Pierre Wachet and the technical team there. That's pretty much the same as it was prior to all of the changes. Still got GP, still got Hannah, still got all of these senior figures there. There has been a big turnover at Red Bull, of course there has, but I feel like, yeah, Max has seen enough, and he's got a new teammate, I think, who will... Isaac's got some fight in him. I'll give you that. He's definitely got some fight in him. I'm excited for that.
So it won't be like Max is the kitten and playing a little ball of wool with Isaac?
No, I don't think so at all. Yeah, yeah. I think Isaac's well up for it. I think he is well up for it.
Awesome. Fight. Good, good. Definitely. On to Ferrari now. Mm. So Charles Leclerc was fastest at the end of the pre-season testing, and Lewis Hamilton looks like he's in a slightly better frame of mind going into this year.
Yeah, I think without the ground effect, I mean, that he struggled a bit with the ground effect on the previous rules that we had from 2022. And he does seem happier with the way these cars move around a bit more, slide around a bit more. Of course, having to relearn a huge amount about the power system, you know, which is effectively now half electric and half normal energy power, you know. So we'll just have to see how it goes for Ferrari. But I think it is impressive that they've set those fast laps. And I think they are going to be... could well be contenders this year, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they started the last regulation cycle quick, didn't they? I mean Charles and Carlos were right up there at the sharp end in 22. So I mean, I'd love to bet, I think if it was any other team and you looked at testing and it wasn't the red Ferrari car, you'd be like, oh yeah, they're gonna be up there this year. But because it's Ferrari, it's like there's been so many years of broken promises. Like, I feel for the Tifosi, because it's I mean, it's what, 2007 last time they won a Drivers' Championship, 2008 last time they won a Constructors, which is far too long for a team of Ferrari's prestige and heritage. So, yeah, look, we'll see. The whole turbo thing is going to help in some ways. It might hurt them in others. And, yeah, as you say, I think Lewis does seem certainly more chipper than he was last year, that's for sure. And that was, you know, I think Lewis, look, if that car's quick enough, him beating a prime Charles Leclerc, you know, Charles 29 now, that's a tall order. Like, that is a tall, even if that car's good enough, I'd love to see Lewis find it in himself.
Yeah.
But Charles Leclerc is Charles Leclerc, and I think he is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't know, how do you two think that head to head would go down if it's a top car?
I think it could be very close, actually. I mean, I think, there's no doubt that Lewis struggled a bit last year. But it was his first year with Ferrari. He's getting a new race engineer this year. That whole relationship didn't quite fit together. It just depends, I think, if he's feeling a bit more confident with this style of car and with the whole unit. And I think he would have worked hard, actually, to build people around him a bit more there at Ferrari. And I think that will come together more. And I do think that both he and Leclerc are very talented drivers. And don't forget, you know, he did actually take a sprint race win last year and beat Leclerc on that weekend. But most of the times, you say, in the main races, Leclerc was outdoing him, you know, in terms of qualifying and in the races. Yeah. But I do think if he's got the confidence that he needs, he could be absolutely a major contender.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The only thing is, though, that Leclerc has been, you know, born and bred in that company, and Lewis hasn't. That would be the only thing that, you know, that would detract.
Also, hopefully, that would be a hell of a title fight. Leclerc Hamilton, come on, please.
Oh, yeah.
That would be so good.
And so to McLaren then, Lando Norris, has he got it in the bag to go for another win back to back? And Oscar Piastri nipping at the heels or overtaking?
Yeah, I do think it's going to be a fascinating year for McLaren. There's no doubt. I mean, they've done a good job in testing. Lando Norris has been impressive, and he's been very positive about what he's been putting out about driving the car as well. Oscar Piastri's just been ticking away as well and up there too. And I do think that they could be in good shape. I don't think the car was quite as competitive yet. But the development, I've seen this before in testing. You know, we go through testing thinking, oh, this team's up, this team's down. And then you go into the first few races. And it's often actually not until you get to the fourth or fifth race you actually see which team is on top, because the tracks are all different. Mm. They all provide slightly different surfaces. It does take a while. But I think McLaren will be strong this year. I honestly do, because it's still a very well-run team.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, look at the jump McLaren took in 23. When they just, like, in Austria, Lando just turned up and was at the front, and then Silverstone, they, you know, pretty much locked out the front row, didn't they? So the concern for McLaren right now, from my understanding, is that they don't quite have the battery management side of things down, and that's where Mercedes have the advantage, being the supplier. is that the customers, Williams, Alpine, McLaren, haven't had as much time to understand, and that, you know, 50% of the power is coming from electric. So understanding that side of things is going to, I think, take McLaren a little bit more time. So that's one thing. Again, from a chassis point of view, Rob Marshall has been doing incredible stuff. Like I don't think he gets enough credit for how McLaren turned things around. Him and like Peter Prodromo and the technical team at McLaren are top notch, no doubt. Stella's running a great ship, and Zak Brown is Zak Brown. So, I mean, they've got all the ingredients there. They've shown it. They've won two constructors' titles in a row. I think they will start on the back foot, but also, you know, Lando and Oscar, they are top drivers individually. I think we'll see a better version of Lando now that he's won this title, because I think that will release an inner confidence in him that he's spoken himself. You know, he's always, you know, struggled with self-doubt and all of these emotions that we all struggle with to an extent. But, you know, I think we're going to see a better version of him. And I think Oscar is just, I think he's mustard. I love Oscar. I think he's great. And I think he's got everything he needs. I don't think the car will quite be there at the start of the year, but it's a long season, so you never know.
Lando has actually said, you know, I've seen that I'm a world champion, therefore I believe it. And that will definitely, you know, boost him. Yeah. But I wonder the nigglingness between the drivers. I think that is going to escalate potentially this year, because Oscar really wants to win. He's, you know, and Lando wants to defend.
Certainly if they're fighting for a title, if they're just, you know, third best team, then I can't. I mean, I think McLaren, as much as I don't agree with a lot of the papaya rules that they did, and I think they made a rod for their own back a lot of the time, I'd be surprised if they start scrapping when they're fighting for like P5, when they were fighting for a championship. But I'd love to see it, Vicky. I'd love to see the chaos. Like, it's brilliant.
Finally then, Mercedes, George Russell, Kimi Antonelli. I'm expecting good things. Are you?
Yeah, we are. And they are being betted well, aren't they? So, the Mercedes team is looking good. It does feel as though they had such a good, strong start, Barcelona and the first part of Bahrain, that it almost felt like they were not showing everything in the second part of the testing that was going on. But they did have a few little issues where the car had to pull over and be dealt with. So, you know, it's not all straightforward and all simple. But I do understand that everybody is very much thinking Mercedes are going to be potentially the championship contenders, as we mentioned earlier. In fact, between, you know, we mentioned George and Kimi earlier on, we do think they're both going to be up there, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think Toto's kind of wounded from seeing this last generation of cars where they were really nowhere, went with the zero pod car and it just didn't work out, and they were never really competitive at the front, you know, bar the odd win here or there. So I think he will be absolutely determined to re-establish Mercedes as the top team in Formula One. And yeah, again, look, they've got everything they need. They have their own power unit, which is backed by, you know, Daimler and Ineos and Toto himself. And he's sold some of his shares, but he's still, you know, a shareholder in that team. And yeah, again, great balance. You've got George, who's been through the years of, you know, making the mistakes, but has crafted himself now into a driver who I think on and off track can carry himself in a way that I'm like, yeah, I can see him as a world champion. You know, I think there's drivers, I would say for Lando last year, you know, he didn't fit the traditional championship mold. I think George has that like edge to him, and he's like elbows out. We saw a little bit of it, didn't we? A little bit of niggle between Russell and Verstappen. And I'd love that. That needs to be back as well. Because George and Max, I love them too. They're so good.
Good wit, good bants.
Yeah, it could be a big battle. We shall see.
So good.
I think George has got the ruthlessness now to do it, the killer instinct now to do it.
Agreed.
Yeah. So it is the perfect time for you to hit that bell and follow us, please, wherever you get your podcasts. We are also at Essential F1 on the socials. Thank you. Do you fancy a bit of predictions now?
Oh, why not?
The prediction championship of the world. Mm. So the rules are, once again, fiendishly simple, much more simple than the current F1 rules. Mm-hmm. So you pick a winner, you receive 6 points. It's then 4 points for second, 2 points for third, and 1 point for fastest lap. Ben, producer Jim, and esteemed show guests, And defending champion Nicola, they all get to have a go. Congratulations, Nicola, by the way. Very, very well done on that. And Tomo, you are the first guest of 2026. So predictions, please. 1, 2, 3 in a fastest lap.
So race winner in Melbourne will be Andrea Kimi Antonelli.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You said it about Rosberg.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I think Kimi will bring it.
Okay. And then who's second and third?
George Russell, P2.
Okay.
And P3, Pierre Gasly.
Come on, the Gaz. And FL? Fastest lap.
Fastest lap. Why not? You know what? Max Verstappen, I think Red Bull will have a good, will be good on battery management. And I think he can deliver a fastest lap, but he won't be on the podium.
Cool. Nice spreading there.
Spread my bets.
Yeah, sweet. Ben?
Yeah, it in many ways it's predictable, and otherwise it's so unpredictable. I really can't imagine it could be anything really. But I'm actually going to go for Charles Leclerc for the win, because I think he might get off the line really well.
Yeah, and stay
but
there.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see if that works. I'm going to go George Russell in second place, Max Verstappen in third, and fastest lap for Antonelli. I'll give him fastest lap.
Oh, producer Jim, in your most excited voice, please.
Okay, I am really excited about this.
Okay.
<Really? laughs> I'm going home hero, Piastri wins.
Oh, sweet.
Yes, they look pretty good off the line as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Russell second, which everyone's going for, and Leclerc third with Russell fastest lap.
Okay, nice. I think it's time that we actually heard from the current champion, Nicola Hume, and from some far-flung holiday destination, she sent us this.
Right, predictions for Australia 2026. I'm going to go P1, George Russell. You weren't expecting that, were you? You were expecting Max Verstappen, but no, I'm going George. That's what I'm doing, because it feels right. I feel like this could be Mercedes' year. It could also be Ferrari's year because of that rotating rear wing that they've got, which is very fancy, by the way. So I'm going to go P2, Charles Leclerc, P3, Lewis Hamilton, fastest lap, Kimi Antonelli. Done. Oh, that feels good. It's good to be back.
Oh, George Russell, not a Red Bull then, Nicola. But lovely that you have all chosen different winners.
Very lovely. I think that, you know, Nick's hedging her bets with Russell. I get it, but also, Nick, that's a bit boring. No, come on. Everyone thinks George is going to win the first race. You've got to do something different. Come on.
Formula One, ladies and gentlemen, is back in our lives. Whoop, whoop. We made it through, people. Oh, yes. So please hit that bell as well to follow us wherever you get your podcasts from, so you never missed a twist or turn of the 2026 season.
And Vicky, thank you so much for coming along. It's been great having you with us.
It's been a right hoot.
Tomo as well. You've given us so much information.
Thank you.
We're really looking forward to this first event. And then, of course, we'll be back next week to review what went down in Melbourne. Looking forward to seeing you then.
Come on, Hulky.
Ah, Hulky.